Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
New U.S. sanctions on Iran took effect today, 6 months after President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the international nuclear deal.
The sanctions target Iran's shipping, financial, and energy sectors, all key to the country's already struggling economy.
The bombs, which the FBI referred to as improvised explosive devices, were sent to the FBI's bomb laboratory in Quantico, Virginia.
We're in Mexico again tonight as thousands of migrants try to find a faster way to the U.S. border. The White House says it's now getting help from the Mexican
Making news out of Pittsburgh. The man accused in the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh is pleading not guilty, and he also wants a jury trial. He's facing a 44 count.
In the final seconds before the Boeing 737 MAX crashed into the water, it was traveling at more than 500 kilometers an hour. All 189 people on board were killed.
You've now entered the House of Mystery.
Crime, conspiracy, history, and science.
With your hosts, Al Warren, Mike Brown,
Julie Sav, Michael Butterfield,
Dr. Joseph Usinski, and Michael Hawley.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm your host today, Al Warren, and joining me for the interview is Michael Hawley.
Hey, Mike. Hello. How you doing?
Doing good. So now we're in your specialty today, Jack the Ripper, what you're known for, and ripping off Jack. And holy. Now, so we've got one of the great writers all the way from the UK, Paul Begg. So, Paul Begg, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
So, Paul, now let's just find out where you got started. How you've written a lot of books on this subject. What got you into this this killer?
Well, I was not so much interested in true crime or indeed in serial killers at all. Originally, it was historical mysteries that I was interested in, and of course Jack the Ripper was a historical mystery, so I'd read a number of books as and when they were published on the subject, and then it was getting close to the centenary, and I was looking for a book to write, and I thought, well, I could write one on Jack the Ripper because I'd researched a lot of stuff out about the crimes, and I realized that, as bizarre as it may sound, that nobody had actually written a book about the crimes themselves and the police investigation. The big thing then, of course, as it still is the identity of the killer. And I thought, well, if I didn't discuss the suspects and all the rest of it and just concentrated on the crimes, then I would have a book that was pretty different. And so I started approaching publishers with this idea, and that was tough because most of them were wanting a book that offered a new suspect, and I didn't want to do that. So eventually that man called Jeremy Robson at Robson Books had the courage to go with a non-suspect related Jack the Ripper book, and that was it, really. The book was written and published and accepted and proved to be quite successful.
And that was the book was Jack the Ripper, The Uncensored Facts, is that correct?
That's right, yes. Yes, not that there were any facts in it that had been uncensored prior to me writing it, but subsequent to my writing it, but that was a title that the publisher chose, just to give it a little frisson of interest, I suppose. But
well,
yeah. So
I'm really excited about this interview because of us that do research within that area, we have people we call expert of experts, and it's funny, one of the ripperologists on this side of the States, Brian Young, he calls the expert of experts the kind of an Americanism, kind of like in the Dear Boss letter, but an Americanism that the Mount Rushmore of experts. And Paul, you are one of them. Sorry to, you know, and I know you are very humble, but when I was talking to Brian about getting the interview, this was a kind of an exciting time, especially because I am, you know, I do a research on this particular suspect, and what is really wanting is the expert that is really not really a suspect expert, but an expert of everything, and that tries not to kind of be pigeonholed. And and also, you know, the book that I love of yours is called, you know, the Jack the Ripper A to Z.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do is, I think, was it the first one? It was like 1991. And then And you keep on updating.
Yep. Well, I'm just working with some colleagues now to do a new update, which should be published, hopefully, at the end of this year. But I suspect that it will be early next year now, because it's just... just getting bigger all the time.
my version is the 1996 one that I have here. So
yeah,
and then your name, I have Martin Fido's hands signature. I have Keith Skinner's, but I'm looking for yours. So I'm going to take a trip to the UK someday to get this.
Right. So. Yeah, it is. I'm impressed that you've got Martin and Keith. The three of us, we obviously we got together whenever we could, but it was very rare that we ever got together in the same place for an event of some sort. So unless you knew us and sort of, not that we hid away, but unless you came for a beer or something, the likelihood of coming across the three of us together was remote. So a lot of people have got combinations of our signatures, but it's rare to get all three. Which
yeah,
I suppose makes the book quite valuable, really.
Well, I was excited that Martin Fido was the keynote speaker at the Ripper Conference in Baltimore, and I got to speak myself, and so then I sneaked his, and then Keith Skinner was in Liverpool, so I sneaked his, and then I got him at a weak moment, so I could get it. So now it's somehow I'm going to have to find a way to do that as well. But
well, I'm available.
And what's the nice thing about also within the Ripper research community, we're focusing on a lot of research and then trying to write the best we can, and the exciting thing. And I've talked about this before. My background was I actually did peer review in the physical sciences, and there is a set peer review process. And when we're working in the ripperology community, we don't have that set. But there's one area where I wanted to take advantage of is we have this niche magazine called Ripperologist, and that's where we get to publish. And so the nice thing also is there is a book reviewer. You might know him, Paul. His name is Paul Begg.
Yeah.
So, yes. You've been.
I'm leaning on a pile of his books right now.
Yes. And what is intriguing to me is We go through, we wait for Paul, you, to give us our a book review. And why that's important, and this is why your very first book, you said that you wanted to kind of have an unbiased, not focused on any particular suspect. And in the case of us, the suspect researchers, there is a lot of times, even some of the experts will say that, why do I want to read that particular book? Because obviously that person's biased. And they'll put a spin on it, something to that effect. But what I'm excited about is when you had reviewed my books, you're not biased in that respect. And so it's clear. So that right there, I think, is an exciting thing.
Yes, I don't think that it serves any purpose to be biased. And, you know, really, one good thing that comes out of this is that what I think is the most important thing is sincerity. I've worked and helped research books with, some, oddly enough, some perhaps most controversial would be books by Patricia Cornwell and right. Shirley Harrison on the Maybrick Diary. And I'm very happy to, as is Keith, we both have worked with Patricia, and she's very honest, she's very sincere, she's very passionate in her belief that Walter Sickert was Jack the Ripper. I try very hard not to favor any suspect,
mm-hmm.
but it's important, I think, to have that freedom of mind, because I can help Patricia research her favored suspect and then help somebody else research theirs. It's the research, it's the information that they gather that's important.
Right.
And if in the process they happen to prove that their suspect was Jack the Ripper, then so much the better. But the real probability is that we will probably never know for absolute certain who Jack
right.
the Ripper was. And so therefore, the likelihood is that Jack the Ripper won't be any of these people. So,
right, right.
You know, you'd not having to be committed to anything. I like that feeling. It gives me the freedom to look at all the information that comes in without, as you say, any sort of prejudice.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is when I look at there are a lot of people that have done some credible research, but I do have noticed that some when I we have a lot of Facebook social media groups that were communicating with each other, and some almost stop reading or researching. And the nice thing is because you're doing the book review, you keep up with the material. Question, has it changed from, let's say, from 1988 to now your mind at all on is it still the same for you, the understanding of the Whitechapel mystery?
Yes, I think so. I mean, all the time you get new information and you get a new perspective, and I think that's what keeps you going. I didn't, 30 years ago, I didn't imagine that I would be, the 30 years down the line, I would still be churning out material about Jack the Ripper, and I've tried to write other things, but people won't let me. But, you know, the thing about Jack the Ripper has always been that we never really had the depth of knowledge, the depth of information about almost anybody. And now we're getting that. The colleague of mine, Adam Wood, has just written this tremendous biography of Swanson, for example, who, as you know, was the one of the investigators of the Ripper crime, but a lot of other crimes as well.
Right.
And that book really sets the bar for police biographies. But the important thing is that now we have a book that gives us a lot of insight into the character and personality of that particular man.
Right.
And when we come to assess statements that he made, then we are in a better position to be able to assess them properly because we now know more about him. But we're still lacking that in-depth knowledge of people like other police investigators like McNaughton or Anderson, or a full understanding of the newspapers at the time.
So basically your Jack the Ripper A to Z is going to get thicker and thicker and thicker.
It's looking that way, yes. I mean, we're changing the format a lot for the new edition with concentrating on a lot of other things. One of the things with the A to Z that was interesting was that when we first did that first edition of the book, we were very conscious of the fact that almost anything was accepted.
Mm-hmm.
We would say things in the book such as that a theory or a book or some article should be treated with caution, which was basically saying don't believe this and things. But that's not necessary anymore. And in fact, we feel quite embarrassed that, looking back, that we seemed, although it wasn't at the time, that we seemed so arrogant that we were in a position to tell other people what they could or couldn't accept. But nowadays, so many people are very well informed about the subject, and as you will have noticed if you've been, you know, following the Facebook sites or other ones like the message boards on Casebook or JTR forums, you'll see that people have become quite aggressive, really,
yes,
when they are challenging somebody else's theory, if somebody else comes up with something that they don't like. But that's good. That is showing that Ripperologists are not prepared to accept anything,
yeah,
which is at one point is what people commonly thought that they would be doing. So, oh yeah, here's another suspect. Yeah, the Ripperologists will all accept that. But they don't. And that's the big thing that's changed. And so the A to Z is changing that way as well.
What is interesting about the casebook, and this is a while ago when I was first starting the research, and on casebook, I remember there are certain experts, or they consider themselves experts, because but there's that psychological term called gaslighting, where when someone, here it is again, today's politics, we see this all the time, but there it is, that the person had said something and then honestly contradicts him or herself, and so convincingly that people that don't, you know, that you almost change, your change of sense of reality is almost changed. And there was a case where this particular person that was, he was commenting about that, and I remember we had already had this dialogue before, clarified it, but he went right back to the original arguments, and then luckily you stepped in. And then so once you stepped in, all all that noise just kind of stopped. So it was good to have you around at that time.
Doesn't always happen.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's, yeah, especially some of the people that like profess to be the black sheep of the group, they like to continue with that. So it's interesting how that works. So to me, it's good to have someone around to help that. And what's funny is that, like Casebook and JTR forums, the dialogue can be pretty darn long. Now, the Facebook groups, it's a little bit shorter, so people have to be a little more concise when they talk or they communicate. Mm. So sometimes that's good.
Well, of course, on Facebook, I notice really you get a lot of people who are very new to the subject, and so they are asking all the sort of questions that on Casebook or JTR forums would never get asked because everybody knows what the answer is. So it's almost like the thing on Facebook is that you'd get people saying, do you think it was the Duke of Clarence? And if you were to ask that on Casebook or JTR forums, you would be lucky probably if you got a reply, and if you did, most of them just be, no.
That's right.
So it's a lot shorter there, and you don't get the depth of research. I think it's interesting the way that they all break down. I don't know whether you noticed, but I think Casebook tends to have people discussing various aspects of the case in depth, whereas on JTR forums you get quite a lot of original research being done by people like Deborah Arif and so forth, and so they you get different things on different sites.
Right, and I wonder if it's because of the facilitators, like Howard Brown does a great job of just keep on producing material. And which I've actually taken advantage of his site quite often, and definitely because he's finding some really exciting things. And then Casebook also has the Rippercast, which I know you help out with Jonathan Menges. Yeah. That really, it's also another place where people can come and then find listen to the experts talk when you communicate.
Well, I think Rippercast is terrific. It always was good in as much as you say you can listen to people talk, and one of the great things about that, I think, is that when you listen to people talk and it's like you're with them when you meet them, you realize that for the most part these are ordinary decent people.
Yeah.
That doesn't always come across from the written word very much, and so a lot of people get angry with one another, and I think sometimes if they were actually sitting having a coffee or a beer or something together, they wouldn't be anything like as hostile.
Yeah.
So the Rippercast was very good from that point of view, and even if you weren't participating and you were just listening, it was interesting to listen to the people and get a feeling for them that way. But right. Now, of course, after, 10 years, I think Jonathan Menges has built up a tremendous archive of information and people.
Right.
And a good few of them, sadly, are no longer with us. We've, the old crowd are gone.
Yeah, we're going to keep you around, though, Paul. I know.
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, I've got no intention of going anywhere, but but like Martin, Keith, and I remember Richard Whittington Egan referring to us as the young lions, and quite recently we've been described as the old farts, which is much less polite way of describing us, but to have gone from one extreme to the other is quite depressing.
So, but that's okay. But still, and you have said it, and I remember Martin Fido was talking about within the last 10 years there's been this influx, and it might be because of the social media, but there's a lot of interest. Even on TV there's a lot more documentaries coming out, good and bad, but sometimes it's interesting because some of the documentaries that we'll see on, let's say, the History Channel, that they forgot to talk to the experts, and so it doesn't have legs, but what it does is it starts dialogue quickly. Even when something on TV, it keeps the Whitechapel murders on the front burner. We had recently when supposed shawl DNA on a shawl supposedly confirmed that Jack the Ripper was this particular suspect, and so you were involved with that, but it was nice to come back to have discussion with you, and then when you had that dialogue with Dr. Turi King, who was the foremost expert in forensic genetics, kind of embarrassed by what the research was.
Well, it's, you know, the shawl is one of those interesting things, is that we have the the guy who did the DNA is, he's fully accredited to do that, and he's university employed and so forth. So there's no reason to suppose that he's lying or doing anything of that kind at all. So he seems to have genuinely got DNA of these individuals from a shawl that, as far as we know, didn't have anything whatsoever to do with a Jack the Ripper murder.
Right.
So it's kind of strange. I met both Russell and Jerry, the scientist, and they're both fine people, and I don't think that, and I think they were sort of taken aback by the hostility that they encountered.
Right.
But again, it's down to the fact that people were just not accepting something which they thought could not conceivably be true, and I don't understand the DNA side of things, so.
Right. And I think what Dr. Turi King was talking about was that because it was placed in a peer-reviewed journal, a journal of forensic science, that they would not have hidden some of the data, because peer review means you need peers to review your data. But I remember she was talking to you about it and saying that there were two marker differences, which means it was a mismatch, not a match, and that she was actually one of the referees prior to putting it in a peer reviewed journal, and she said that how it's written, it's not ready. And so not that she was just completely rejecting it, she said in its written.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
You know, so, but they published it that way, and so she was pretty bothered by that, I recall. And then,
yes, I mean, she Mind you, I mean, with Turi, when she's talking to you about the DNA, or at least when she's talking to me about the DNA, she might as well have been talking to a brick wall. I mean, it literally all goes over my head. I've got no idea what she's talking about. But it's one of those areas where you have to leave that aspect, I think, to the scientists. When somebody who isn't a scientist on that level gets involved in trying to debate the argument, it becomes a little bit amateurish in a way, I suppose.
Like, I bet one particular area was good that it went through the experts, the provenance of that shawl, and that's where we know about, you know, PC Amos Simpson was definitely a Scotland Yard patrol constable, but Catherine Eddowes' body was not found in their jurisdiction, and I think you guys had kind of shown that, which was quite an interesting aspect of it.
Yeah, well, Amos Simpson was a Metropolitan policeman, and Catherine Eddowes, in any event, was murdered within the jurisdiction of the City of London Police, which is an entirely different police force. And so not only would Amos Simpson have had no particular purpose at being at that crime scene, but he was, as you know, the Metropolitan Police District is divided up into areas, and his area was nowhere near the East End. So that was another reason why he wouldn't have been involved. And I can't imagine that the City Police would have given a piece of crime scene evidence,
right,
such as it was, to a Metropolitan policeman. That just doesn't seem to make sense at all.
Right.
And sadly, there's no part of the story to tell us why. Why Amos Simpson would have got this. And we know that lots of policemen, if they were on duty somewhere in London at the time of Jack the Ripper, then that gets brought into their little story that they tell, and they recall quite genuinely, I think, in many cases, how they had to keep an eye out for Jack the Ripper. But in fact, they were miles away from the East End at the time. But it gets into their little retirement stories that are put into the newspapers, or which the family come to believe. Amos Simpson may never have said that this has anything whatsoever to do with Jack the Ripper. He could have said that it was to do with a Whitechapel murder.
And oh, yeah.
The family would just assume.
Right. And then continue that way for sure.
Yeah.
And also the particular suspect involved is actually a credible suspect. So at least we still have kind of discussion with him. I think it's Kosminski is the one. And
that's right, yes. I mean, Aaron Kosminski, or Kosminski has been now a suspect, was mentioned in the McNaughton Memoranda of 1892. So he's been around for a long time as a suspect, we still don't actually know who Kosminski was, although I think it's fairly certain that it was Aaron Kosminski. But
okay, I know. And then ideas of Nathan Kosminski, I think, is another. I think Martin.
Yes.
Talked about. So, it's to me, it's the research is what is exciting. When I first got into this, just like most everyone is like, okay, this is kind of a cool mystery. Let's see, you know, what I can do. And but then immediately I realized when I grabbed my first brand new 1996 copy of Jack the Ripper A to Z, I realized, oh my gosh, there is a lot of information here. That there's actually a phenomenal amount of research. within one particular suspect, one particular police officer, every single aspect is being researched.
Yes, it's I think it's one of the exciting things about Jack the Ripper. And I say this all the time, and it's a point that people get bored with it. But what interests me, I think, is that a subject like Jack the Ripper, it gives the opportunity to everybody to look for and research and perhaps find some tidbit of new information, which is always welcome and always interesting. But there are... and getting fewer, I'm afraid, real feathers that people can get to put in their cap by doing their research. I mean, just for example, one would be a photograph of Inspector Aberline.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have one. Whoever comes up with that will probably be made in Ripper circles for the foreseeable future.
Right.
Along with whoever identifies Mary Kelly, or, you know, there are these things that are out there for people to find. But it's the little bits of information that are so welcome that just help to flesh out the stories and to tell us more about what was going on. And that's something that anybody can do. You don't have to have a university degree in history or anything. It's just a matter of reading books and looking at original source material and doing everything else. And there are people out there who are doing brilliant jobs at doing that.
Well, I think you're going to be reading a book soon by Tracy Ianson. She's finding some more material on that suspect, Jacob Levy. So she's talking about some exciting things, so that's really interesting to see what that is, too.
Yes, indeed. I'm waiting for that. That book has been promised for a little while, so I'm quite on tenterhooks to be able to see, that one.
Right. And, but I do know that sometimes waiting on the publisher... It's like you're promising, and then it doesn't happen for another 6 months or so.
I know it's been on the stocks for quite a while. So, and Adam Wood's publishing it, and I was talking to Adam earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully, he'll be on that as soon as possible.
Well, make sure he keeps on working on his next Ripperologist issue, too. He's got to get that out.
Yes, that's what we were talking about today. Fortunately, the slight delay that he's been going through over the last few months has meant that I was able to finish off another pile of book reviews. So we got a huge book review section this time around. But... not too many Ripper books in it, unfortunately, mostly related titles, but...
Yeah. And I think I have an article in that particular one coming out, so I'm looking forward to it.
Right.
So, don't give him a bad review, that one.
Uh-oh. No, that's when my next book comes out.
Yeah. Do you think there's any real new information that's coming out or has come out lately?
I mean, there's a lot of stuff coming along. I have to say that I'm very grateful that I've got two co-authors along with Keith on the upcoming A to Z, because it's terribly difficult to try and keep up with all the new stuff that's coming out. It may not be massively important. But there's a lot of fresh genealogical information emerging. People have been doing a lot of research into the so-called non-canonical victims. So they're identifying them and their histories and where they came from. That work has always been going on, but is continuing to go on. And I think that there's a lot in that area. I'm hoping that we will see a lot more emerging as people look at some of the peripheral characters and help to build up the story. An area of particular interest of mine, which I'm getting around to bit by bit, is the way in which Jack the Ripper is I think probably unique in that the impact that he's made on social history and the fact that we've had United States bomber in the Second World War was called Jack the Ripper. There was a train called Jack the Ripper. There's a toilet spray called Jack the Ripper. A strain of marijuana called Jack the Ripper.
I have that toilet spray right in front of me, by the way. I do.
I actually have it on a shelf just behind me. They must have done remarkably well with the Jack the Ripper toilet spray. But that have all the way in which Jack the Ripper has impacted in that way on things today. And in the Ripperologist, for a long time, every issue we would have various quotes that people had recently, things that people had recently said that involved Jack the Ripper, usually sort of comparisons, but there's no other person, I think, who has made such a big impact on us. You can drink a Jack the Ripper beer. You can go and have, which I don't necessarily approve of, but you can go and have an Elizabeth Stride burger. You can do. There are restaurants. There are clubs. There are movies. Jack the Ripper crops up in television programs. And goodness knows how many storylines for television, movies, and everything else have got been inspired, if you like, by Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge untapped area there for people to start doing research if they felt so inclined. It doesn't help us identify who the Ripper was, but I'm not that bothered about that aspect of the case personally. I'm just amazed at the way that the Ripper has, as I say, impacted on society.
Why do you think that is? Like, what is it about the Ripper? I mean, you've reviewed a lot of writers and read a lot about this and written. What is it exactly about the Ripper? Because there's been far worse killers and there's been far more violent killers and things, but what sticks out about Jack the Ripper that we have spray in our bathroom, you know?
I think I think it all goes back originally to the fact that in 1888 people, senior police officers and members of the judiciary and doctors, they knew about serial killers. They didn't have the terminology that we do today, so they didn't they didn't start off with, they didn't call them serial killers. They knew about these people, and there was a lot of discussion about them, and they were trying to decide whether it was some sort of moral degeneracy or whatever it might have been. But the average person, the average man in the street, didn't know about serial killing. And the idea with Jack the Ripper was that he murdered women who had nothing. And these murders that had no obvious gain were frightening, and I don't think people really understand just how scared people were in 1888.
Yeah.
And this was a new and terrifying phenomenon. The idea that there was somebody out there who you'd never harmed, never even met, who wanted to hurt you and even kill you, was, for most people, something that was completely and absolutely new. And that led people to speculate. They tried to give Jack the Ripper a motive, and that's where we get the ideas of the deranged doctor, the mad midwife, and the religious fanatic, and so forth. And that's what people did for years afterwards. They would speculate about what sort of person the Ripper was, and that continued right up until really the 1960s, and I suppose one of the last people seriously to do that would have been Robin O'Dell. He wasn't naming a suspect, an individual, but he was referring to the type of individual that the Ripper might have been. And I think that once that ball started rolling, once the mystery sort of took a hold, then Jack the Ripper, and very, very quickly, I mean, I'm talking about within years of the murders, Jack the Ripper took on another life. So we had the real murderer, but we also had another character who was a sort of gothic horror creation who inspired books and stage plays and stories like The Lodger by Belloc Lowndes, and that's carried on through to today. Now, no other murderer would do that again, because there would only been one that started it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, history is a fairly arbitrary thing. I often ask myself, of all the marshals in the Wild West, there's only one really that sticks in everybody's mind, and that's Wyatt Earp. And you think to yourself, well, why? He wasn't necessarily the most upright law officer at the time, but he's the one that people remember. It's like Al Capone is the gangster that the people mostly remember. And I think Jack comes out a bit that way, but I think it the whole origin is in the fear that the crimes created at the time, and the way that people subsequently tried to explain and get rid of that fear by providing Jack with some what for them was an understandable motive.
Within the community, Jack the Ripper community, what is it that makes people so serious? You know, like their opinion or their idea, their book is the right one and everyone else is wrong. Like, they're so aggressive toward each other.
Right, Al, mine's right. Remember that. Oh, I'm sorry, Paul, did I interrupt you?
I always let the little people go first. It's easier. I think that what it boils down to be honest, I've thought about that quite a bit now. I think the trouble is that people come to Jack the Ripper and they do their research and they read the books and they think about the books and they think about what they've read and they decide whether what they've read is right or wrong, and they invest something of themselves into that conclusion. And when that conclusion gets challenged, they take that personally instead of realizing that it's the theory that's been attacked. They think it's them that's been attacked, and you know, it's understandable. We all feel that way, and I think I would certainly do, and I think everybody else does as well. It's very tough to take yourself out of things and say, no, you're actually right there, or I'm sorry, or whatever. It's people defend their own thinking. They've invested a lot of themselves into it.
Mm-hmm. Fake news.
So I think that's one reason why.
And I got to tell you that, to me, if anyone wanted to kind of get involved with this now, they need to me, in my opinion, is get Jack Ripper A to Z. Even one of your older ones, but whenever your new one comes up, because it really does give a good overview. And then if you get interested in a particular area, for example, for me, my suspect is buried an hour and a half away from me, so that started my interest. So this right here is would be the first thing I would recommend, definitely from Paul.
Well, that's very kind. That's very kind. But the interesting thing is that in the early days of when I was getting involved in the subject, I was fascinated by the fact that so many people at that time, and there weren't some back in 1988, there weren't that many books around, but a lot of people like yourself, it's interesting what you just said, they get involved because there is a local connection.
Yes.
And I suppose, in a way, having been born and bred in Cardiff, which is where Mary Kelly is supposed to have gone and been introduced to prostitution by her cousin who was living there. And so I went to the local library and was looking through the local evening newspaper, hoping that the South Wales Echo and the Western Mail would actually be containing it, would have done some research and found out more about Mary Kelly being a local person, which unfortunately they didn't really do. But there were other people who were interested, either, strangely enough, they either became interested in, they were interested in Druitt, and through that became interested in the local history of Blackheath, or they were interested in the local history of Blackheath and then got interested in Druitt.
Right.
And so they had a wider range of specialist knowledge about areas, and that was always very useful to have as well, because they knew more about the area than I would have done, and they lived there, and they
right.
They knew all the history and so forth. So that's another interesting aspect of the case. You can pick up on the local
right
features that are local to you.
So Ripperologist, what is it, and how do people get a hold of it?
What, the magazine?
Yeah.
Well, it started, Ripperologist started off as the club magazine of a society called the Cloak and Dagger Club, which is now called the Whitechapel Society, and it then took off on its own, and it's been going now for about, oh gosh, how many issues have we done now? Something 150?
Around there, yes.
Odd issue, something like that, of 30, 40, 50, 60 pages a time.
Yes.
And if you look it up on the internet, you'll find the contact details there, and it's free. So all you have to do is subscribe to it and provide your email address, and with any luck, it will duly land on your computer.
Yeah, it's not the doorstep.
I was going to say doorstep, and I was desperately trying to think of an alternative.
Wow. So now you've got several books out. Do you have a website yourself as well, or do they just get it through Amazon?
No.
Nope.
No, it's just Amazon.
Okay. Well, perfect.
If people are interested, it's... I think I'm not sure if they're all still in print anymore, to be honest. I know that...
Well, there's still about 10 of them are. And I've even seen your very first 1979 book there, too.
Yes, that crops up. That's into thin air. That's... yes, that's my fond little child looking back on that one.
Yeah.
Well, Paul, it's been wonderful talking with you, and we'll have your books up on our website so people listening can just go one click and pick up your book.
That's good. Thank you.
We've been talking Jack the Ripper, and we've had Paul Begg with us. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.